The Rules and Administration Subcommittee on Personnel and Budget will come to order. It's Wednesday, June 26, 2013. We have two things on the agenda today. That's the Senate budget and the salary supplement. And so I'd like to ask, where'd she go?
Secretary Zoft.
Oh, there you are, Secretary Zoft. You were sitting over there before. Secretary Zoft, I was going to call you Selner.
No more.
No more. To come forward and start out with the documents that everyone should have in front of them.
Madam Chair, did you want to start with looking at the budget or with the salary information?
The budget first.
The budget first?
Yeah.
Okay. You have before you, I believe, the document with the very fine print that sets out the proposed Senate budget for the upcoming biennium. You'll see that the total, the appropriation was increased from the last several years so that it is $23,133,000 for fiscal year 14 and $22,633,000 for fiscal year 2015. Some of the major changes from previous years, certainly the salary component has been increased. As you know, there have been no overall staff salary increases since 2008. There have been some adjustments as people have moved in and out of new positions, but for most Senate employees, there have been no raises or promotions since 2008. So this budget takes into account the need to get the salary system, the promotional system working again, and to provide increases for Senate staff across the board.
Thank you.
There's also one of the significant factors is that there's an expectation that health insurance costs are going to increase substantially going forward. I believe the amount of the anticipated increase was about 12% per year, so that'll be a significant amount that covers both the members and the employees. There's also a significant amount of money put in for the first time in many, many years into Senate technology, so that we're going to be looking to provide new equipment, new computers, replace many of the printers and the copiers, and, you know, really provide some very necessary improvements in that area. Another thing to take note of is that that's going to be included in, at least for this biennium, that will be a line item in the budget rather than in previous years when we've had technology needs that had to be filled. We've just gone to the carry forward, which you know, didn't recognize the reality that we really do need improvements on an ongoing basis. I guess the other significant difference from previous years is under, it's about two-thirds of the way down that last, the non-personnel group of expenditures under fees, notary, summons, admissions, and litigation. There's an increase of $500,000 in anticipation of the litigation expenditures for the Senate that are going to be required.
Secretary Zoft, is that primarily why there's a drop in the 2015 budget is because you don't have that litigation costs?
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's anticipated that money will be available starting in the first fiscal year, and it would carry over if there are additional costs going forward. So that would be available in either of those years. So those are the most significant differences from previous budgets.
Do you, I know there was a question that came up about the deferred comp match on line 15. We talked about why there's $300,000 in the first year and $150,000 in the second year. You want to explain that?
Sure, Madam Chair. The reason why that is doubled up here is that the deferred comp match had been suspended. That was one of the things the Senate had done in the last several years to save money. That was looked at as something that you know, could be put on hold. That wasn't an absolutely necessary requirement. But this budget does contemplating reinstating the deferred comp match. And the reason why there is a doubling of the cost is that that's payable on a calendar year basis. So it may be that in that first fiscal year of the biennium, you're going to be making two matches. And then in the second year of the biennium, there would just be the one. So you're looking at an annual cost that would be about $150,000. That's very speculative. It's kind of hard to anticipate how many people are going to take advantage of that.
And then do we ever find out what the development IMB is, line 40?
Madam Chair, that was some kind of contracts, and I'm sorry, I'm not remembering. Mr. Greenwalt might be able to help us with that.
Mr. Greenwalt? Oh. he's busy. We'll come back. Jim, Mr. Greenwalt?
Yes.
On line 40, development IMB, what was that? Oh, are you trying to find out on the phone?
No, that's someone else. Jim Greenwald, that is for use of computer services through what is now called Minute and through West Publishing, and then it's in essence data processing services versus software or any sort of hardware.
So it's a contract we have, Ben?
We have a contract with West Publishing, but what we have is with, for instance, Minute. We spend some money there to stream our video to the public. We also use it, especially in the tax analysts. They use the models and whatnot over there on their computer systems and their databases.
Okay. Please, if anybody else has questions, please feel free to speak. Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair and Ms. Zoff, now is the budget originally promulgated by the MAC?
Ms. Zoff. Secretary Soft.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, no. The MAC is involved more extensively in the personnel issues. There have been times when, I mean, certainly the MAC would look at the budget, particularly with respect to the amount that's allocated for salaries.
For purposes of the tape, what is the MAC?
Madam Chair, the MAC is the Management Advisory Committee, which is a group of Senate staffers. It's the minority and majority caucus chiefs of staff, the Secretary of the Senate, the Director of Council Research and Fiscal Analysis, and the Human Resources Director. And that had been an entity that had been operating for many, many years, and then in the last several years had not been used. But typically we function as a group that will try to develop some expertise in some of the personnel issues and advise the leaders going forward.
So Madam Chair, just to comment, so we have three members of the MAC in the committee room right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been struck, and you and I have talked about this, that there are no senators who are on the MAC, and I'm not sure. I'm not volunteering. I've got enough to do with my life. But I've always thought, Madam Chair, one of the funnier things I've heard over the years in the Senate is when Mr. Flavin was Secretary of the Senate, he would emphasize how many committees the Senate budget went through, and he'd go through the list of committees, starting with the MAC, and he'd talk about state departments and the Senate rules and the Senate Rules Subcommittee and the full Finance Committee and the floor of the Senate, and I thought, this is very humorous. And so there's still an element to that. So I know, Madam Chair, your intent is to spend a little bit more time with this than we have in the past, but I still am struck by the fact that the MAC has no elected officials on it.
Well, we don't know who created the MAC as a creation of tradition or history. Secretary Zoff?
And Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, I would, if it's reassuring, the MAC is strictly an advisory. I mean, the name of it is an advisory committee. You know, the MAC, because we are just staff people, we don't have the final say in anything. You know, we will make recommendations to the leaders and the rules committee, and you know, it's up to the senators to make the final determination, certainly with respect to the budget and respect to personnel issues.
Madam Chair, Ms. Zoff,
Senator Cohen.
Well stated.
Thank you.
I just wanted to take a moment to, in case anyone hasn't met our new Human Resources Director, Dee Dee Larson, if you wanted to stand for a minute. And we hope that our subcommittee will be working with you a lot in the future. So welcome.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you. Ms. Zoff, I just have some questions about the technology, and I don't know if that's the lines 41 and 42, but how that compares to the prior 2 years. And, you know, I recognize laptops are pretty old right now, and I just want to get a sense of how much that's going up.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, I think I'd like Jim Greenwald to respond to that because he's much more involved with the technology expenditures and purchases.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, the funds are, well, we used to have previously $40,000 per year, what was in it. And as the Secretary had noted earlier, if there was something that really had to be purchased, it usually came out of the carry-forward account. Otherwise, it was really a maintenance sort of level thing, keeping things going. Members and staff both are aware that the computer equipment we have may be 5 to 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So it is hopeful that with this appropriation, we will be able to replace members' laptops that staff use, and hopefully desktops. We are looking at also replacing printers that we have. Those may be 10 years old. And we also have some issues with Wi-Fi and a little bit of back office items. Mm-hmm. So that's what the appropriation here is for, and it is considerably larger than what we've had in the past.
And it's spread over 2 years. Mr. Greenwald, do you have a plan in place yet as to the process for replacing computers?
We're putting that together right now. We have a strategic direction. There is a survey that is out asking staff and members to respond as to what some of their concerns are about that network. Once we get that back, we'll better be able to identify some of the needs and wants of members. Primarily, what we will be doing is replacing workstations, so it's a thing that you will be touching and working with. They're fairly slow, as the one that your LA is using now is probably 3.5 or 4 years old. And we would like to change that so that there's a cycle. The past, it's always been once it gets so old that everybody complains, we get appropriated some money and we buy some new. There would be nice if we could have some sort of a cyclical methodology of replacing equipment. We don't know that in advance. We have had budget issues in the last few years, and so technology has sort of deferred many of their initiatives the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was just going to say, I think we certainly have gotten our useful life out of our technology, and so I was going to suggest that would be a good idea to have a plan in place where it's
over-refreshed.
Yeah, rather than at the last minute they're all falling apart, that we actually have a plan, and you're one step ahead of me.
Can you talk a little bit about tuition and training? That line 58, like, do we, does that include CLE training, or do we have a policy on training, or maybe we need a policy developed on training? Secretary Zoff or Mr. Greenwald?
Madam Chair, I can't say that we have a policy that's been consistently applied throughout the years, and quite frankly, over the last, I would say 5 to 7 years, if you talk about CLEs, for example, you mentioned that the policy in the past had been that the Senate would reimburse the attorneys in the Senate counsel function for CLEs if they were related to the work that they did here. If you were, you know, studying in your field, you would get reimbursed for your CLEs. And the Senate stopped making those reimbursements, I'm thinking at least 5 years ago, probably more. And we all, if I will say, kind of became experts at finding the freebies all over town. But, you know, it's a difficult thing because you need that kind of training to maintain your job here. You know, that's something that personally I would advocate for. I know that's not what you're asking. But there are other kinds of training that I think certainly staff is hungry for and I think would really appreciate having some kind of policy in place in the Senate where they're able to find opportunities to learn things that are going to benefit them in their job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's certainly something I think would be great to pursue, to come up with a policy that's going to be fair and it's really going to use the Senate resources well.
Well, there are a number of us who are interested in training. I know we've been talking to Ms. Larson, my staff, Senator Sieben's staff has been looking at what we can do in-house, you know, because we have a lot of expertise in-house, what we can use NCSL. Sure. They will provide us with services with training like around ethics, for example. We're looking into that. And I think that category is maybe broad enough to cover some kind of health and wellness issues that most modern workplaces have for their employees. Thanks. That would be good to look at.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you. Ms. Zoff, lines 53 and 54, talk to me about out-of-state travel and per diem. Number one is, do we have a policy in place now? I know that's a shift. And then in particular, why 2014 numbers are significantly higher than 2015 numbers. So in a nutshell.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazalka, a major component of that increase for the current year has to do with the fact that Minnesota is going to host the NCSL annual meeting, quite an enterprise. That's going to be in Minnesota next summer. But part of the preparation for that event is that a number of senators and staff are going to be, and House members as well, are going to be traveling to Atlanta where this year's national meeting is. Apparently it's the tradition to do quite a presentation for the upcoming year's host committee in the current year's event. So that's a significant chunk of what's budgeted there. There may be an interest in opening up additional out-of-state travel, but I don't know that there are other specific plans for that.
Senator Gazalka, there are 10 members and staff that are going. I think it might be 4 members, 6 staff, or 5 and 5, something like that. I believe Senator Senjum is going from the minority. I don't see Ms. Ryan here. She has the list. And this could be reimbursed to the Senate. If we raise enough corporate sponsorship, then the costs of going to Atlanta will be reimbursed.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the budget?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who this is addressed to. Mr. Greenwald, you know I had this concern at the start of the session, and so this comment is not direct to the past, but to the future. But I know it took us quite a while to get our letterhead. And so I just want to make the comment that if we're in a little bit more of if we have a little more budget stability right now insofar as our budget is concerned, I would expect we have some buyer's ability with our vendors. And I want to make sure we get full value from any contracts that are issued if we're going to start, for instance, buying computers, as an example. I think in my particular concern, the printing of letterhead, I would think if the vendor we've been using can't turn things around more quickly, there are going to be a lot of vendors out there that we could talk to who would turn things around so we would have a letterhead by the start of the session. Now, that's probably not a problem now because we're now into the term, but if we're going to start with the budget problems easing up, where we're dealing with outside vendors, I would expect if this is done either Ms. Zoff through the Secretary's office or Mr. Greenwald through your office or through the MAC, whoever it's going to be, that we try to make sure we get full value and arguably shop around some of our proposed contracts, because I would think, I know my smaller level, my law office, for instance, certainly doesn't have the contracts or the employees that the state Senate has, but we find ourselves usually with the upper hand in terms of our contracts with outside vendors. So hope we can utilize the same for this budget.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly can have it earlier. We would want to probably redo the what we have in the contract. The reason it's delayed and it's not when session starts is because in a year like this year, members want to have their committee assignments and their commissions and those sort of things. So we are not able to submit the copy until the members have done that. Some members don't get that done until the end of January. But we can probably rate the contract so that if a member knows what he wants on his letterhead on December, we can certainly have it purchased at that time.
And there's no question, Madam Chair, Mr. Greenwald, that in an election year, obviously things change. And this year, there was a significant turnover. After the 2010 election, there was a significant turnover. And there's no question that that makes it a little bit more difficult, I assume. But I think the committee assignments were finalized around Thanksgiving or shortly thereafter. And where most people know what the case is, if it's difficult to do things piecemeal and we have to put it in a printing order in totality, I can understand why then it goes into, say, end of January, first part of February. But I just make that's why I make the comment as a general comment, that it just seems to me that if we have some stability with our budget, if we're now going to embark on purchasing, again, computers is a significant example, that we should have some buying power on our end of it.
Okay, a motion to approve the Senate budget and refer it to the full committee. Senator Sieben?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, Secretary Zoff, if you want to move on to the salary supplement then. Thank you, Mr. Greenwald.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, you had asked me to just do a brief overview of the Senate salary system or the person or the employee system. I think you have in your packets a document that's titled Senate Job Ranges Distributed by Salary Range. I think that's going to give you kind of the starting point for the Senate employee or salary system. All members of the Senate staff are divided into job ranges, or I should say salary ranges. The foundation of this distribution was done as a part of the 2007 study of Senate salaries and employment conditions by NCSL. That's the last time we had a very comprehensive study. NCSL came in and they evaluated all the jobs that were currently situated in the Senate system and evaluated the levels of responsibility and difficulty of the work and consequences of error, and then tried to match those rankings up with market values, which, as you can imagine, it's a very difficult task because it's awfully hard to find comparable provisions or positions, I should say, in the private sector. It's just hard to come up with that data. But NCSL and a group of us on the staff worked on that, I would say, for probably half time over a period of about 6 months. And this document is based on what was derived out of that study. Over the years, the Rules Committee, the members have taken a look at some of the positions in this range. Some positions just don't exist anymore. Some have been added. Some have been modified. The duties have been changed. And when that happened, we would look to find the most appropriate placement within the ranges for those positions. Occasionally, there would be an analysis of a particular provision or position, and if it was found that that position's range was way out of whack for the market, we weren't able to hire for that position, something of that sort, then that might account for one of these positions being moved from one range to another. At any rate, when an employee is hired for one of the positions, they're obviously placed at the range that their position is situated in. It has certainly been the practice of the Senate this year to hire almost all incoming people at the minimum of the range. There was a concern about the Senate budget as we went into this year, and so people who were brought in at the beginning of this session, with very few exceptions, were brought in at the minimum of the range. You can see that there are a number of positions here that have Roman numerals after them, and those are referred to as career path positions or job families. For example, if an individual is hired as a legislative assistant 1, which is in a range 3, there's a system within the Senate that provides for promotions from one range to another. And the foundational requirement is that the individual has to have served a particular number of years within that range. But then we also look to make sure that the individual who's seeking a promotion has had some kind of a more extensive experience. Maybe they've taken on some additional tasks. They might serve as a mentor to other employees. But something to just show that their contribution to the Senate is richer than it was when they started, and therefore they would be eligible for a promotion.
Secretary Zoff, is that request, is that responsibility on the responsibility of the employee to say, you know, I've been here 3 years, I'm requesting a promotion, and these are my extra duties, or how does that happen?
Madam Chair, I guess it would vary. There might be some employees who have come forward on their own. I think typically, though, it's the supervisor who is aware of the individuals within their office who are in these job track families. And typically the supervisor would make a request that the person be promoted. Historically, those requests have come to the MAC, and we've reviewed them and made a recommendation. But then that's always also subject to approval by the Rules Committee. So,
when you say supervisors, do you include senators in that group?
If you're looking at, for example, an LA who is assigned to work for you, yes, you would be the supervisor.
One of the training things we have talked about is for senators is management training, because I don't think a lot of senators know that, mm-hmm. that they are responsible for their staff and the future, you know, kind of the success and training and promotion of their staff.
Right. And Madam Chair, I would say that's something that Ms. Larson, the new HR director, is very conscious of, you know, coming into this as being kind of a new setting with a different kind of a supervisory structure. She was aware of the fact that many senators, I think, would like to have some training and some knowledge about the consequences of their being supervisors to the people who are assigned to them. So.
Okay.
There are other avenues for promotions. There are some individuals who are not in those job families that have the Roman numerals, for want of a better descriptor. Those people are also eligible for what has typically been a one-time promotion, which would also be a 5%, typically has been a 5% promotion if they show an advanced level of competency, and they've been in that position for a number of years. So it might be comparable to the job family promotions. And I should step back and say that typically the consequences of a job family promotion would be either a 5% increase from the current salary, or at a minimum, a movement to the minimum of the new range into which that employee was situated. I guess that's just in general a very brief overview of the system. It might help to explain. There are a number of people, as you look at the roster of the new salary proposal coming forward today, there were about 14 people who were eligible for these job family promotions. And so it was up to each of the supervisors to take a look at that person and, you know, determine whether they met the requirements of these new positions. I think just in terms of the timing, maybe we didn't look at them as thoroughly as I'd like to see us do in the future when, you know, we've got quite a backlog of people because the system was frozen for 5 years that you know, we were looking at quite a few people. But in the future, I think members will be looking at their own staff and determining if they meet those qualifications. Then we're going to ask the supervisors to, you know, provide some documentation that those qualifications are met, and then the person would be eligible.
And I do recall doing that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've often told my staff when a citizen or a constituent or a lobbyist writes a little note mm-hmm. complimenting you about something that you did, put it in your file, because
right.
mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do an evaluation at some point. I haven't done it 5 years, but and it's going to be nice to have those examples.
Yes.
And I do remember us doing those forms.
And Madam Chair, the other thing I'd point out about the promotional opportunities is that that is not something that's only available on July 1st. Typically, our system has been to provide the overall salary increases effective July 1st. But the promotions are at least technically available at the anniversary date of the employee in whatever period of time, so that those do occur throughout the year.
Okay, we have a couple questions on the overview, the what do you call this, the job titles, and then we'll have Ms. Soff moved into the roster and explain the roster. Okay, Senator Sieben.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Secretary Zoff, is there, I just heard you say, if I understood correctly, that some supervisors, the supervisor in some case would need to approach the MAC to say that their employee that they supervise may be eligible for a promotion. I just want to make sure, because I don't think all the senators necessarily know to be asking that. Is there anyone who is eligible for an increase in salary, but, you know, just because their supervisor didn't know to ask for it is not getting one, or is that all accounted for in the in what we're looking at today?
Secretary Zoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, Mr. Greenwald and the staff of the Fiscal Services Office created a list of the people who would have been eligible just in terms of their years of service. And that has been created not just up to this date, but through the end of this biennium. So what I would what we'll do in the future is that if we see a staff person on that list with an upcoming eligibility, we'll make sure that we contact the supervisor to let them know that that's a potential change for them, so that, you know, they'll be alerted to the fact that they could request that for their staff. We'll try to keep tabs on that, but occasionally, you know, there might be someone we would overlook. And in that case, I think most employees would know as well that they could be eligible for something. And we're all going to try to work together to make sure we don't miss somebody.
But just to understand, you, Mr. Greenwald did go through the list. So everyone who you think is eligible should be included in this new, is reflected in this new document.
Mr. Greenwald and the fiscal people, you know, working together on looking at the rosters and the experience level of people, have gone through that list, and that has been presented. I think anyone up to this point, unless a supervisor had said, you know, I'd like to wait on this, and occasionally supervisors think that there's something that somebody needs to develop their skills a little more. There's a question. And in that case, I think you should hold off for a little bit to make sure that they're eligible for the promotion. But I'm confident that we haven't missed anybody.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Senator Kozelka.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Similar questions. I just want to make sure there's clear guidelines. So I've got three questions I want to ask you, and I'm really looking from here forward. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to compare to anything, but I just want to make sure, like, for example, moving from a legislative assistant 1 to 2 to 3, so the process is definite? For example, is it spelled out, you got to be a certain amount of years? And then how do we make that decision? That's my first question.
Secretary Saul.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, yes, there is a process. There's quite a lengthy document that I could make available to the members that not only sets out the number of years between each level within that job family. For example, the legislative assistants, to go from a legislative assistant 1 to a 2, you have to have served 3 years as a legislative assistant 1. And then to go from a 2 to a 3, it requires 4 years as a legislative assistant 2. And to go from a 3 to a 4 requires 4 years as a 3. So that's kind of the foundation. And then beyond that, we have requirements about, you know, having a more highly developed set of skills and advanced competency, I guess, is the catchword that we've used. So, you know, we have some detail on those kinds of requirements as well.
Okay. And then second question, Chair. Guidelines for, let's say you're a legislative assistant 3, and now lo and behold, parties shift and you're a committee administrator. Do you go in as a 1, or is there an automatic? How does that, is that spelled out where you go?
Secretary Saw.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, typically that if you have been a legislative assistant, that time does not count to, say you've been a legislative assistant for 5 years, and the difference between, say, a committee administrator 1 and 2 is that you have to have been a committee administrator 1 for 3 years. The fact that you've had 5 years as an LA in whatever category hasn't in the past counted for your movement from a CA1 to a CA2.
Because I'm thinking, Madam Chair, about salary ranges. Let's say it was 10 years, for example, you know, and you go down to committee administrator 1, to me that would, I didn't look at the numbers, but it would seem like it would almost be backwards. And I didn't look, but I just want to make sure that there's some clear guidelines going forward about how we're have some of those things spelled out.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, the practice has been that it would depend on the level of the committee administrator or the legislative assistant, and in some instances, for example, if you were, let's say, a legislative assistant 4 is at the same level as a committee administrator 1. So it's conceivable that if you went from being a legislative assistant 4 to a CA 1, because you're in the same range, that may not affect your salary. But there are a number of variables here, and we do try to be consistent.
Okay. And Madam Chair, one last question. Do we have any, is there flexibility built in if we're hiring somebody or to hire somebody above an entry-level wage for whatever the categories are here? I'm just thinking, do we have any measurement based on other expertise that they may bring, or is it just set the way it is?
Secretary Zoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, in recent years in particular, well, I should say starting this year in particular, the practice was to bring everybody in at the minimum of the range. And even though a number of people were hired who had experience that may have looked very relevant to the positions they were taking, the practice this year was to bring them in at the minimum of the range. In the past, we had had a practice where we had tried to take into account closely related other experience. For example, sometimes we would hire staff who had come to the Senate from the House, and they were astonished to find that we weren't going to pay them the same amount as they'd been paid in the House. And so we tried in the MAC group to devise a formula that would recognize experience, and the more closely related we thought it was, the more of an additional percentage for some of those years of experience we were able to give them. That practice really fell away over the last 5 years when we weren't giving any Senate employees any kind of raises, because it seemed very unfair to give people bumps in salaries for their outside experience when we weren't giving them any increases in salaries, even though they'd been working here for some time. So that went away. I know that's a really perennial issue in terms of Senate employees, that there's certainly a good argument to be made that, some recognition of relevant experience from the outside should be factored in as people come in here. Another issue that people often raise is, how about someone with an advanced degree? Shouldn't that be recognized when they're hired? You know, at this moment, we're not looking at those factors, but, I know a lot of people have been quite interested in trying to analyze how we could approach a change in the system like that.
Madam Chair, I could see where a House employee would love to come to the Senate, and, you know, because we're such a great body, and, you know, so if we can make allowances, that would be great.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam Chair, a couple of questions, and let me start out just, I've said this privately and I'll say it publicly. I'm enthused about having Ms. Larson on the staff so we can actually get a handle on this in a way that has some semblance of meaning. And I'm a hook on something that Senator Gazelka just said, because I don't say this critically of Senator Gazelka, but because I think what's happened, one of the problems we have in the Senate now is we've been so used to a system, and to be blunt, for decades. And Ms. Zoff, you would have a better sense of the history, well, maybe not too much of a better sense of the history than myself, but if you go back to the 1960s, there wasn't much of a Senate staff, I don't believe. But when you had the creation of the caucus research staffs, when you had the creation of Senate Council and Research in the way it's operating now, when you had the committee staffs, we really haven't had what we've had this year, which is a change of the majority to the minority following on 2 years ago. So where we're running into some awkwardness both with present minority staff and present majority staff and vice versa is the combination of this change from minority to majority coupled with the freeze in pay because of where the budgets have been. And so it's created some real displacement. We saw that this year with minority staff at the start of the year. We've seen it with majority staff. And so I'm hoping Ms. Larson, voluntarily having walked into this quagmire, will try to take a look at some of this. I'm not trying to debate what Senator Kozalka has said, but for instance, we give credit to somebody coming from the House. Well, in the majority, we have people who worked in a minority capacity now working as a committee administrator. You know, before we start giving credit to people coming over from the House, let's give credit to people who went from minority to majority status, assuming a different position. And I think you could make some of the same arguments going the other direction. Was there an LA who now is in the minority, a minority caucus researcher? So first we have to take care of where we are internally within the Senate before we start worrying about stuff external to the Senate. Getting so that's a general comment that I hope we can address, and I'm hoping Ms. Larson is going to be the person to address that most thoroughly. My second comment relates also, Ms. Off, to something you said relative to Mr. Greenwald's role in terms of making sure this is a little bit smaller, but I think Senator Sieben had raised the question of making sure senators who have not a clue as to what this process is are notified as to when their staff person, whether a minority or a majority staff person, is eligible for some kind of promotion. It would seem to me that it's something we ought to do maybe through Ms. Larson, again, since we have her in place, trying to make some sense of this in the entirety of what we're doing. My last comment's a little bit facetious, but not totally. So when is the last time a person, a senator, because you know, we're not a U.S. Senator. We don't have a staff of 40 people, a committee staff of 30 people under our jurisdiction. When's the last time a senator turned to their staff person and said, I don't think you're deserving of a promotion or a pay raise, and then assume that person is actually going to stick around? I'd be curious. You don't have to give me any individuals where that's happened. But I assume the message to that particular staff person is, you know, maybe you should go find another job without saying it in so many words. I mean, our staffs are small, close to us personally. I'd be surprised to know that a senator is actually going to make that kind of distinction.
Members, the full Rules Committee is waiting for us. So, Secretary Zoff, why don't you go on to the salary proposal now?
Madam Chair, there is a one-page description, I believe, in your packets, a Senate salary proposal to be effective July 1, 2013, that describes, kind of encapsulates all the changes that are reflected in the roster there.
These are 3% is included in the roster.
That's correct. All of these changes are included in the roster. So with the exception of the one-time payment, the second bullet number there, which is $1,500 payment for any current employee who was employed by the Senate as a permanent employee on March 15th of 2013. That amount is going to be paid as a separate check. But the remainder, which is $1,500 for a current employee who was employed on July 1, 2012, and then there are a number of people who were eligible for either the career path or the non-career path promotions, and then there were a number of equity adjustments for individual staff that had been agreed to by the leadership. Those are all incorporated in here. And those amounts are added to the employee's current base, and then there's a 3% across-the-board increase that applies to all of those components. And that's effective July 1st. I believe the first check that will reflect those changes, apart from the lump sum, is going to be July 19th. That'll include all of these amounts.
And when will the lump sum check be?
Is it July 12th?
July 12th.
Madam Chair, it's July 12th.
All right. Any questions about the proposal?
I should add one more thing, too, Madam Chair, that as you look at the document that set forth the ranges and those minimums and maximums, those will be increased by 3%, but beginning January 1st. And the point of that is to create, you know, we always struggle with how to create a little bit of distance between someone who's been on the staff for a year versus a new hire. So we do need to adjust those minimums, and those also have not been changed for 5 years. So we need to bring those updated a little bit.
So new people being hired after January 1st at the minimum of their range would be a minimum of the range plus 3%.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
The idea. Any other questions, members of the committee? Is there a motion to recommend the salary supplement to the full committee?
Sure.
Senator Sieben moves that the subcommittee recommend the salary supplement to the full committee. Is there anyone who wanted to testify on any of this information? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, there being no further business before the subcommittee, go straight to the full rules committee.
107.
Subcommittee, it's in 107. Subcommittee is adjourned.